Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Ask the experts about free fitting on all our kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now though, it's time for a bit of this. Well, the saga that is said to have inspired one of the most successful TV shows in recent years has finally come to an end, because yesterday was announced that a deal has been made between four of Rupert Murdoch's children, which sees his eldest son, Lachlan, gain sole control of his father's media empire, while the others in the family receive a fairly eye-watering $1.1 billion each. Well, to talk us through all of the details of this very long succession battle, I'm joined on the line by Professor Matthew Ricketson, who's Professor of Communication at Deakin University in Melbourne, Australia. Matthew, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you for asking me on.
So Rupert Murdoch, we know, handed over the reins of his media company to Lachlan back in 2023. So how did we end up in this place where this very complex deal had to be done?
Well, it's got to do with a family trust agreement that has the overall control of the News Corp voting shares. Not all of them, but it has that in place so that the Murdoch family historically have always been able to control News Corporation, the big company, by dint of the way in which the share registry is set up, and the key to that is the family trust. There are problems with the family trust, and that's the origin of the current current sort of brawl, and then the current resolution to that brawl. And it goes back to when Rupert Murdoch and his second wife and longest wife, Anna Murdoch, separated in the late 1990s, and they reached an agreement in their divorce settlement that there would be a family trust, and that there would be four votes, one for each of the four children from the first and second marriage, that is Prudence and Elizabeth and Lachlan and James, and four votes for Rupert himself. So what that meant was that if there were any issues about the decisions to be made about the company, Rupert Murdoch would always have the whip hand, because he had four votes compared to his four children having one each. Mm-hmm. What then, that brings us forward to more recent years where, as Rupert Murdoch, as you know, he's elderly, he's 94, he appears to have the idea that he'll live forever, and he does have very good genes in his family. His mother lived to the age of 102 or 103, but, you know, all good things come to an end, everybody dies. And so what that meant was he was worried that increasingly that three of his children, not Lachlan, who has been and is his chosen successor, were expressing views about the way in which the company was run, which differed from him and from his son Lachlan, and that, okay, if he died, they, having three votes, might be able to outvote Lachlan and oust him as the chief executive of the company. Mm-hmm. And that was the kind of fear.
Those three children, outside of Lachlan, they were becoming increasingly disenchanted with how News Corp was being run. So the risk, if you're Rupert and Lachlan, was increasing all of the time.
Yes, absolutely. And the sort of things, though, I mean, James was the most vocal about it, and Elizabeth and Prudence less vocal, but by dint of various things that have come out in the New York Times Magazine and the Atlantic Monthly earlier this year, we have a fair, pretty large window into the way in which the family has been thinking about these issues. But James in particular, he became, at one point he and Lachlan were vying to be the next, chief executive of the company when Rupert died. And he was increasingly disenchanted by the way in which the company was reporting on the issue of climate change and the kind of urgent need to take action on climate change around the world. And that was one thing. He was also, there was that terrible incident that occurred back in 2017, relatively early in the first Trump presidency, when there was a riot in Charlottesville and some somebody, a neo-Nazi driving a car, drove it into one of the other protesters on the other side of that issue, and killed them. And if you remember, Donald Trump famously said at the time, there are good people on both sides of this debate. Mm-hmm. And James Murdoch basically said, I don't know how you can think there are good sides on two good sides in the debate when one of those are neo-Nazis who have just killed someone in cold blood. So, yeah.
I'm just interested to know then what this means. Essentially, have James and Prudence and Elizabeth said, you know what, we just give up the fight here. We will take the money, $1.1 billion each, and you can have the company. Is that how you read it?
Yes, absolutely. And as you said, it's eye-watering. I think you said fairly eye-watering. I would delete the word fairly and say massively eye-watering. It's, you know, it's a very large amount of money. And, you know, but we now know that they weren't, well, whether they were going to try and oust Lachlan Murdoch and change the direction of the way News Corporation and Fox Corporation operates, it's not definitively known. It's kind of hinted at and so on. But if even if they were, they've been worn down by their father and by their older brother. And also, and this is a kind of key point in the leverage and the stakes, is that I think when we were talking earlier about the family trust and the debate about that, that ended up in the in a probate court in Reno in Nevada in America. And in the first kind of iteration of that court case or probate case where Rupert Murdoch and Lachlan Murdoch were trying to change the terms of that so-called irrevocable family trust document, they got taken to the cleaners. That is, they lost that comprehensively. The judge who heard that was scathing of both Lachlan and to a lesser degree Rupert in that case. Rupert and Lachlan then appealed that, and according to the New York Times, who's done some excellent reporting on all of this, the judge who heard that appeal was increasingly leaning towards Lachlan and Rupert's side of the debate. Mm-hmm. And they were also, they being Rupert and Lachlan, were also saying that James had behaved poorly by giving it this interview to The Atlantic where he'd kind of aired a whole lot of material from the court case, which was all supposed to be happening behind closed doors.
Yeah, and I listened to a New York Times podcast on that, which I'd recommend to anybody because it's incredible. But this is where I struggle to see how they've managed to come to an agreement. I mean, these are people who, yes, $1.1 billion is a huge amount of money, but they don't need it. They're wealthy people. So how do you think Lachlan and Rupert managed to convince the three to accept it?
Well, I look, who knows? I'm not in their mind. You're not in their mind, so we don't know. So we're speculating. But I think money was part of it. I also do think they were on the wrong side of the legal argument, whether you agree with that or not. They were, the signals were there that they were going to lose the legal argument, which would have weakened their bargaining position, which probably meant they would have had to settle for less than a paltry $1.1 billion.
Yes.
So I think that's where, you know, these are high stakes things. And I think that's what was, that there was the leverage that was in play.
So a calculated decision based on the facts that they had before them. And where then does this leave his other two daughters? Because he's got two younger children, doesn't he, that he had with Wendy Deng?
Yes, Grace and Chloe from his third marriage to Wendy Deng, as you say. And they have been, it's not quite clear to me whether they've been given a different role in the family trust, in the revised family trust document, or whether they're, in a sense, they were always there in it, but they didn't have voting rights under the original one. I don't know if they have voting rights under this one, but I suspect not, but I'm not 100% sure about that. But in any case, they, according to the New York Times reporting today, the relationship between Wendy Deng and Rupert Murdoch, even though they obviously separated some time ago, has been relatively cordial. And I imagine Wendy Deng was trying to, you know, bolster the position of her daughters in the overall family arrangements. I think one of the, apart from that, which I do think it's important from the point of view of those two young women who tend to get forgotten in all these sort of succession drama discussions, is that more important in a way is what does it mean for the media company now, News Corporation, and, you know, what it seems to suggest is that the vision of it that Rupert Murdoch has had and that Lachlan Murdoch appears to have is going to continue, and you know, I would be by no means the first person to point out to the amount of damage that Murdoch's media outlets have done in various countries, in America, in Australia, in the UK, on a whole range of issues, whether it's coverage of climate change, whether it's phone hacking in the UK, whether it's coverage of climate change here, which is it's a more urgent issue here by dint of the nature of our country, and action on that has been really stalled for a good decade or so, and a good chunk of that is to do with the way in which the Murdoch media has covered that issue here.
Well, look at Fox News. I mean, Fox News survives and is profitable because it tells its audience what it wants to hear.
Precisely. And that's, I mean, that's not journalism as far as I can tell. That's propaganda, really. That's what I would describe it as.
So clearly, I mean, that route is going to be relentlessly pursued now by Lachlan Murdoch, you would imagine.
Yes, you would think so. And you know, we shouldn't underestimate the role that Rupert Murdoch and his company have played in the rise of Donald Trump. That's the other, you know, that has long roots back into his newspaper, the New York Post, back in the 1980s, but then in Fox News as well. Both of those media outlets have played a significant role in the rise of Donald Trump.
Matthew, it's good to talk to you. Thank you very much. It's a fascinating story for very many reasons. That's Matthew Ricketson, who's Professor of Communication at Deakin University in Melbourne in Australia. Coming up later on the programme, we're going to be finding out about this new service to help grieving children deal with the loss of a loved one through a farming accident. But next, we're going to look ahead to Ireland's World Cup qualifying game against Armenia today.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.